Beyond the Stethoscope, the podcast for veterinarians, healthcare providers, and busy professionals who want actionable, implementable solutions surrounding work-life balance, accomplishing your goals, and living your dreams. I'm your host, Dr. Angela Demery.
We are here today with Kathy Robinson, corporate executive turned author, teacher, and certified wellness coach. Kathy began her career on Wall Street and spent 15 years at a Fortune 250 company before retiring as its chief risk officer and chief audit executive. After decades assessing the wellness of corporations, she turned the lens from professional assessments to personal ones, becoming a certified coach and sharing her wellness journey and philosophy in her new book, The Athena Principles: Simple Wellness Practices for Overworked Professionals. Welcome, Kathy. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Angela. I appreciate it.
And your book couldn't be more timely. So many of us busy professionals are struggling with self-care and self-compassion right now, trying to juggle all of our new day-to-day in light of the COVID-19 pandemic and how it's changed our lives and our businesses.
Yeah, I wish I could say it was planned, but who had any idea where we were going to be in this time?
I'd really love to just understand a little bit more and understand your perspective.
Sure, yeah. Well, let me tell you a little bit about what we do at Athena Wellness. Now that I'm no longer part of the corporate world, I help busy professionals, of which I was one for many years, and entrepreneurs now really optimize their well-being. And I do that through coaching and now through writing and meditation practice offerings. And so the folks that are drawn to work with me, much to your point, are the ones where, you know, they're either attempting a new wellness goal or they're facing some sort of life transition. And so what I really wanted to do with my business in the book is to help these folks not only, you know, do what normal wellness coaches do, which is focus on the body, whether it's nutrition or exercise, but to go deeper. And we'll talk a little bit about that, you know, as we move forward of how do we really connect with our inner wisdom. There are very few things I can tell an executive about themselves. It's helping them find the answers within them. And so it feels like what I'm really doing is more soul level work. It's addressing the disconnect between wholehearted living and helping a client put a plan in place and define what is a good life for them and then help them create a plan to move toward that.
Yeah. And I'm so glad you brought that up because it's not just about exercise and nutrition, but also our energies and you know, hobbies and spirituality and all of the things that make up a life, right? Our relationship and having that feeling of well-being. So can you talk a little bit more about, you know, your soul's work and how you're helping people to really connect with all of the aspects under this wholehearted practice?
Absolutely. Well, you know, I think it goes back to my personal wellness journey, which I do outline in the book along with other professionals as well. But I really had three turning points. And it wasn't until I put pen to paper that I realized one was related to body, one was mind, and one was spirit. Like that was kind of the evolution. And so the first one was related that most people can kind of relate to in my mid-30s, you know, working at a job I wasn't too engaged in. And I realized that I had become 25 pounds past my college weight and just I wasn't taking good care of myself. And so I put myself on a program that included weight training, cardio, and clean eating. And it really changed my body in a way that it gave me a lot of confidence, and I really kept up with some sort of nutrition and exercise protocol in the 20 years that followed. So that was a really great, I call that, that was my foundation. Fast forward 5 years, I'm 40, I'm at a top investment bank, and I wanted to get away as far as New York City as I could. And I wind up in the wilds of Alaska. So in the middle of these millions of acres of wilderness, and really had a chance to kind of reconnect and realize that, first of all, I was completely burned out, but I was compartmentalizing my emotional and the creative parts of myself. So I had become like this work machine. And when I got back, that really resulted in some lifestyle and job changes. And that's when I left Wall Street to go to the company that I just retired from. And that was when I was 40. Fast forward 5 years from there, more of the spiritual journey. I'm in my mid-40s and I find myself at a writing retreat the first time ever on Whidbey Island, which is off the coast of Seattle. And I was so out of my comfort zone of, you know, this corporate persona that I had, that I really had a chance to connect with my inner voice and also to understand that the life I was living was really not aligned with my personal values. Meaning, what are the things that were important to me? So I really took some time to think about who I wanted to be, how I wanted to live. It was the least visible change externally, but internally, it was the biggest change. And it's really the reason why I'm here doing the work that I do today. So when I think about helping my clients, and we talk about this broad spectrum of wellness, it's my feeling that no matter where we enter, and we can talk more about the details if you'd like, but we can enter any place and go deep. But there's also this sense of moving across the spectrum horizontally. So I started on body, on nutrition and exercise, and then kind of moved up the spectrum, went deeper and deeper. So once my body felt good, I was able to address and kind of clear my mind. And then I was able to get to more of that connection, you know, for more of a connection, not only with myself, but with my relationships as well. And everything changed around that.
And I love what you said about finding yourself outside of your comfort zone, because for us to grow and expand and learn, we have to sometimes step out of that comfort zone, outside of the box, outside of our strengths, and start asking ourselves, like it sounds like you did, and something that I teach and talk about with certified high performance coaching is also this idea of having that growth mindset, right? Being outside of that comfort zone and asking what's necessary for me to serve here, not just what am I good at and how can I do more of that?
Exactly. Exactly right. Yes.
Find that so fascinating. I'm so glad you brought that up. And I just really wanted to point that out for my audience, because so often we find ourselves, oh, this is hard. We're struggling. It's a challenge. But the first time we learned how to walk, it was hard too. And now we do it without thinking. Absolutely. So is there anything else that you'd like to share around this idea of getting outside of your comfort zone and really leaning into that work?
I'd really love to dive into this holistic wellness spectrum, because I think you'll see as I kind of go through that, that there really is this wellness journey. Let me take a step back a bit and talk a little bit about the Athena Principles, the book, and why it was written, right? So this is really, it was meant to help readers reconnect with their mind, body, and spirit by introducing them to simple wellness practices. And these are wellness practices I was able to do when I was an executive. So I'm not asking anybody to go to the Alaskan wilderness. I mean, that was the point. It's like, how can I give somebody this experience while not stepping out of their, you know, day-to-day lives? So it's really, these practices are designed to help people treat themselves with more self-compassion, which was a hard lesson. That was probably the last lesson that I learned, right? That came last in it, which is why I put it first in the book. How to uncover their deep soul-level motivation for change, because that is really the fuel that carries people. What is that intention? What's the emotion behind that? The why on why people want to change. And then how to show up for themselves consistently with, you mentioned growth mindset, with optimism and enthusiasm. Like, that is really key. That really changes the experience of the journey, right? We can kind of slog through it, or we can really show up with an open heart. And then how to create a customized self-care plan, because it's going to be different for every reader. So how do they actually take and say, okay, here's where I want to start, and here are the simple steps that I can start with. And then lastly, how to develop a support system. So it's really meant to teach and inspire through story, and to help people reimagine what wellness and what life can be. So that being said, there the methodology is comprised of tools, principles, and practices. The tools, first one, is this holistic wellness spectrum, which is really an inventory of focus areas and where people can enter their journey. And then I have a very simple wellness assessment that's almost like a grid that shows at a point in time, how much satisfaction do I feel in each one of these areas? And I'll go through those areas in detail in a second. Then there are five principles: self-compassion, intention, consistency, positive mindset, accountability. And then there are related practices, which is writing, meditation, and positive action practices. Now, the spectrum, to get to your question, is really, when I designed it, the first section is on vitality, and that's exercise and nutrition. So exercise, not only moving, But how do we recover? How are we sleeping? How are we managing our energy? How are we managing our stress? What are our self-care practices? And then nourishment, I'm a plant-based kind of gal, but whatever that your eating philosophy is, how do we make it clean and healthy and supportive of your lifestyle? How do you think about food preparation and systems to be able to support this, especially in challenging times? How do we not kind of fall off the bandwagon? The second part, which is more of the mind part, is really about flow. And so I have three categories: simplify, flow, and create. Simplify is about things like letting go, which is what we're finding now in the environment that we're in with, you know, sheltering at home. Like, what are the things and the practices that no longer serve? How do we let those go? How do we let those go with ease? How do we mindfully consume? What are our morning and evening routines? Flow is more of presence. It's discerning, you know, what to say yes to and what to say no to. But also things like intuitive living and living more with your own rhythms and the rhythms of the seasons. And then lastly is create, whether it's through writing or through exploration or through your own purpose in your work, an aligned livelihood. How do you feel engaged in your day? When we get to the end of the spectrum, which is connection, there's a contemplation column on spirituality, but it also includes things like being out in nature or meditating. And meditating doesn't need to be sitting on a cushion. It could be 5 minutes hand over heart in the morning of just giving yourself 5 minutes of space. And then lastly is connection, not only your intimate relationships and your family and friends, but also the community around you and your social circle, which leads to the last three things on the spectrum, which are my favorite. The whole reason why we do this is to celebrate, is to have fun and play, and is to have some sense of adventure, because that's what life is all about.
Thank you so much for sharing that. I mean, I hear so much right now from so many of my colleagues in the veterinary profession, so many busy professionals across different professions. And having that sleep routine and that nighttime routine is so incredibly important. I'm a morning person, and I have a lot of friends and colleagues who are evening people. And so, like, our routines are totally different, and our ideas of how to get things moving are completely different. But, you know, really making sure that we're setting ourselves up for sleep is incredibly hard, like putting down the phone an hour or 2 hours and turning off the TV, you know, before we go to bed when we're trying to catch up on all of the day's activities. So do you have any suggestions for a good sleep routine or other ways to make sure that we're being really mindful of that piece? Because so often I think we forget about it, and it's incredibly important.
Yep, you just said the key word, and that's mindful, right? And so My ideas, which I'll share, you know, may not work for everybody, but there's this sense of ramping up when the day starts and kind of winding down when the day ends, and what that means for you and your situation. So for me, at the end of the day, you know, I really try not to eat anything past 6 p.m. at night. So, like, it literally starts with that last meal. And then I try to take steps. I get up incredibly early, so I go to bed fairly early, pretty early. So between 6 and, let's call it, 9:30, like, those are key hours for me. But to your point, it's really hard to balance between, okay, how do I catch up on the day's events? Because we want to stay informed, but how do we not go to sleep with this onslaught of what is usually not too encouraging news? And what's that right balance? So I try to get a little snippet of news around 6 and then try to ramp it down where the lights get a little bit low. I mean, not when it's solstice, which is where we are today. So, you know, I also try to be more in line with seasonal energy. So now I do go to bed a little bit later, but on a normal evening, trying to eat early, close down the television, try to get off my devices, and try to set myself up for sleep, because I know if I have a good night's sleep, I'm going to have a great day the next day. It's that important.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I really appreciate this idea of, I think you said it so eloquently, ramping up your day in the morning and then kind of relaxing and shutting it down at night. I think no matter who we are or what our perspectives are, that gives everybody a framework with which they can use for their own purposes and make sure they get good sleep. So I really appreciate you sharing that with everything happening with COVID-19 right now. And I'm just dying to learn what it was like to cross an ultra marathon finish line at 54 years of age when 20 years before you couldn't run one lap around the track.
Yeah. So I told you about my first wellness awakening when I was in my mid-30s. And when I got on the treadmill, I literally couldn't run more than 1 minute at a time. So I would do a lot of walking and kind of build up. But the ultra marathon was never an ultimate goal, that's for sure. But it does show the power of taking small, consistent wellness steps over time. So I started running a few miles at a time, twice a week, you know, when I was able to in my 30s. I ran my first half marathon around my mid-40s, and then I was feeling some aches and pains, so I really scaled it back. So for most of that time, I was maybe running 3 miles a couple times a week, but then I began to explore endurance sports in 2016. Through work, we were supporting a charity called Cycle for the Cause, which raises money for AIDS awareness. And a lot of folks in my company signed on to do this ride. And I hadn't been on a bicycle for like 20 years. And so, but the ride, it was from Boston to New York City over 3 days. And so I really started to have to learn how to train, how to have sports-based nutrition that was plant-based, recovery and sleep. What was that like in my 50s now at this point? So, you know, the physical part was what I would expect, but there was a deeper component that I really loved. And that was, I found it was a really good way to connect with myself in the quiet. So it was a time of my mom's passing, you know, my dad needed some elder care. Moving my body and being out in nature became like a refuge. It was this place where I could just listen. I listened to a lot of podcasts at the time, learned a lot, and really empty my mind and imagine what the future could be. So it was just like this expanse. That was really what kind of got me hooked. When the ride was over, I knew I didn't want to do a bike ride like that again. And about 6 months later, I started to get this little whisper in my ear. And I never even ran a marathon to that point of like, wow, what would it be like to run an ultra marathon? I read a book by Rich Roll called Finding Ultra. He was a recovered, not only a recovering alcoholic, but a recovering lawyer, which was a lot like the profession that I was in. And, you know, how he went from this workaholic to what was considered one of the fittest men in America. And it was incredibly inspiring to me. And I wanted to try to emulate that. So I think what I was most proud of wasn't so much the race, was just the culmination, but it was really the journey that I really felt was really priceless for me. I learned so much about myself. When you're at mile, you know, 30, you learn a lot about who you are. But I think I was really most proud that when I crossed that 50K finish line, I really had energy. Like I didn't hit a wall. I felt really good that my training plan and my protocols worked well.
And to your point about not hitting that wall, I ran one marathon back in 2008. And I remember around the mile 19 mark, I'm just chugging along just with my little plan and people are just moving backwards. And I'm like, how are they going backwards? I can't be getting faster, can I? But I only share that because when you really do the training and you really have a plan and it works for you, it really can be a game changer that way. So I think that goes with every aspect of life, every aspect of business. Where do you want to put your focus? What do you want to improve? And do you have a plan that works for you?
Yeah. And so much of it, you know, even beyond the physical, there was so much that I learned mentally of what I was capable of, you know, and just kind of you almost go to another plane when you're out there and doing this and knowing that, you know, there's a lot of resilience and self-reliance that comes out of activities like this, that I think really when times get tough, like when we first, you know, learned about this pandemic, it's like, you know, you have some sort of faith in yourself, like I can get through this. Like we can find a way through. So I think it does a lot, not only for your physical self, but also to your point, like who you are in business and who you are for other people. There's so much learning that comes out of committing to an event like that.
Yeah, that's super cool and so inspiring as well. I really love to hear more about your trip and journey in Alaska. How long were you in Alaska?
Well, at that point in time, I worked for this, I was able to get 3 weeks off and we literally drove from New Jersey to Alaska and back in 25 days. 10,000 miles. So I wouldn't suggest that to anybody. It was kind of a breakneck speed, but it was the only way that we could do it at the time. But now I actually just bought another camper van and I'm looking to retrace those steps. But instead of 3 weeks, someday, whether it's next year or sometime in the future, I'm going to take 3 months and really do it the right way. And write about that experience and the difference between, you know, doing that in mid 40s, you know, or 40 and doing it at perhaps, you know, 55, 60, and seeing the difference there. But yeah, I've been to Alaska 3 times and there's something when you come from a very urban environment like I did growing up in New Jersey and being out in the middle of all that wilderness, you realize even looking up and seeing the stars in the Milky Way for the first time is so inspiring that there's so much more to us than what we see in our daily lives, and to be able to kind of another way of getting out of your comfort zone, right? So there's a theme here that's emerging of, you know, getting out of the day-to-day into something that's different, to be able to have a different perspective. And I think that's really helpful as not only you think about wellness, but as you think about life.
Oh, wonderful. And it ties in so well, because how do we connect to our still point, right? So that's a great opportunity to just kind of be quiet and still and connect in nature. And it's still so important with COVID-19, but even with all of the social distancing, some of my family and friends are having even a more difficult time because they can't get away from their family, their kids, you know, they're all in a house together. And how do we find that still point when it's like, oh, well, we have social distancing, we have more work from home time, we should have more free time. But then the flip side of that coin is if you've got a family and a young family, that can add some additional challenges to that spectrum as well. So, you know, any thoughts and ideas on how to connect to our still point, no matter what the chaos is around us?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, you bring up a good point, because while we are all going through a similar experience, our experiences are very different. And so you think about the folks that are on the front lines, whatever that might be, delivery, medical, police, those who are actually been impacted by this disease. I mean, they don't have the privilege of being able to shelter in place and to have some of these issues that we're talking about. So they're having a very different experience. The folks, to your point, that are homeschooling for the first time, having a very different experience. The folks that have to, you know, worry about elders in elder care, very vulnerable, they're having a different experience. And then the folks that normally work from home are having a very different experience, right? So you make a good point that wherever you are there is opportunity to be able to connect. It will just look different, right? It'll look different. So I find that people are actually in, and I'm generalizing, in two camps of one, this is the best time ever because they get a chance to connect to their still point. And the other is they don't have the willingness to want to do that. And sometimes that's because it's a little scary of what we might hear or see, right? And there's no unseeing this once we see it. So what a lot of times what happens in wellness is that people have a feeling that something needs to change, as I did when I was in my 30s, but you really don't want to look at it because it really forces you to look at the reality and the choices that you've made that have led you to the place that you are. That's a tough place to be. Put a pandemic around that and put whatever life changes are around that. That's a lot to hold at the same time. So I understand why there's some of that resistance. But whenever or however people ease into this, a mentor once told me, your life wants to speak to you. And so the still point is all about kind of quieting the noise so you can actually hear your own wisdom. And knowing that what you hear and what you see isn't going to be where you want to end up. And that can be painful. It could be hard. It could seem like I have so far to go. It's better not to just see that. You know, when I had these 3 wellness realizations, it all came about because I got quiet enough in each one of those situations. I got quiet enough to be able to hear what I needed and curious enough to be able to follow what I was hearing. And that's actually one of the reasons why I love this idea of Athena, which is what the book and my company is all about. It's this epitome of self-agency. It's this beautiful mix of strength and wisdom, of the shield that Athena carries and the owl on her shoulder. And I believe that's the power that we can all access when we go within and we find that unique path. Your inner knowing may surprise you, and it probably will surprise you, but it won't fail you. So I think in this time of social distancing, it gives us some time to increase our self-care, and that might be taking a walk, or just stepping outside and looking up at the sky, or stepping outside and getting a little bit of fresh air might be all we can handle at this time, and that's okay. You know, that's part of self-compassion. But I think if we really ask ourselves, what do we really need? Do we need more news? Do we need more, you know, busyness? Or can we just take, even if it's 5 minutes at a time, can we take this little break for ourselves and give ourselves a little bit of space? We don't have to do any heavy lifting. Maybe that's enough to start. And I think it starts with just kind of quieting down. I think it's a great time to really examine what our values are and how we spend our time, how that aligns. And I think sometimes that's the disconnect. We want so much for one thing, but when we really look at how we're spending our time, we see that's the result of why we are where we are. So my suggestion would be a little self-compassion. In my busiest times in corporate, I would literally set my alarm 5 minutes earlier. That's all I had. Hand over heart with a deep breath and say, for the next 5 minutes, Kathy, there's nothing that you need to do. Nobody needs you. You don't need to make a decision. Just be in this space. And maybe that's a great place to start.
Yes. And I totally agree, because when I was at my busiest, when I ran that marathon, the reason I trained for that marathon was it was 3 hours by myself that everyone went, great, we're okay that we couldn't get a hold of you because we know that you're training to raise money for a cause, right? So it was like this built-in excuse that everybody was okay with. Clearly, I was afraid to put in my own boundaries in place. But to your point on overwhelm and just being wherever you are and knowing that wherever you are, give yourself permission that it's okay to be where you are. And my personal definition of overwhelm is the failure to have or communicate your boundaries. Mm-hmm. Or the failure to live in alignment with your values. And mm-hmm. when those two things happen for me, that's when I start feeling the overwhelm creep in. Mm-hmm. And so just another way to frame it, and maybe it'll resonate with some folks out there
too. Yeah, and to your point, I mean, that's really the practice of discernment, right? Of really making mindful decisions of, is this in my best interest of what I'm trying to do? Or is this going to kind of take me off track? And that's a lifelong practice, right? That's something that we never get to the end of that. It's like you're always trying to evaluate and saying, is this actually going to help me? Or is this something that's going to distract me from what I'm trying to do?
Thank you so much, Kathy. And just a shout out, her book, if you just even look through the chapters of the Athena Principles, it's self-compassion, intention, consistency, growth mindset, accountability, and sustaining our wellness practices. And these are some of the key areas that most of us kind of fall off the track. Either we forget to be intentional, we forget to be consistent, we have limiting beliefs about what we can accomplish. So I really appreciate the framework that you've put out in this book, Kathy. And if people want to connect with you, what's the best way?
Yeah, the best way is my website. That's www.athenawellness.com. And if they go there at the bottom of the landing page, they can actually download a free PDF of the principles as well as an action plan. So they can jump right in with a 10-page PDF that's free. And then the book is available on Amazon, the paperback ebook, and the soon-to-be-released audiobook.
Awesome. And now I think it's time for our 5 questions segment. Are you ready, Kathy?
I am ready.
All right. We know that the most successful and happy people have a morning or evening routine. What do you do each morning or evening that sets your day up for success?
I'm a huge believer in this. So when I was working in corporate, I'm an early riser. My coffee pot would go off at 3:45 a.m. because the Athena Principles was actually written at 4 a.m. on most mornings. So now that I work for myself, I give myself an hour grace. My coffee pot goes off now at 4:45. But the routine is basically water, coffee, write, meditate, make my bed, exercise, and get ready for work. that's the length may change depending on what's going on, but the activities have been consistent for years.
And so often, I think as busy professionals, that we conflate the definitions of success and happiness. So I like to ask these two questions separately. So for question number two, what's your definition of success?
For me, it's two things. It's purpose and it's impact. So there's a saying I have pinned up in my office that says, let the life you live be the lesson you teach. And that is my daily reminder to live with purpose and to try my best to have positive impact in the world.
And what's your definition of happiness?
This is about living wholeheartedly, fully embracing who I am, showing up with an open heart and open hands, and doing things that light me up with people I love.
What a wonderful way to look at everything. And for question number four, what do you know now that you wish you would have known 10 years ago?
I absolutely love this question. And I love it because I usually do the opposite and say, what would my 20-year in the future self tell me today? But I would tell my type A perfectionist younger self three things. One, relax and be kind to yourself, love. It's all going to work out and even better than you can anticipate. The second thing would be sometimes you have to let go of things you love to let new things in and to grow. And that's okay. And the last thing would be, don't forget to enjoy the journey. It's a lovely ride. And the funny part is, and I was thinking about this, I'm like, you know, that's what my 75-year-old self would tell me today, to live with ease, to let go with grace, and to just have a blast and enjoy it all.
Oh, yes. Let's have a blast and enjoy it all. Even with all the craziness, right? Like, we can all find joy in the mundane, and whatever it is for you, take just 5 seconds to find the joy and have a blast today.
Yes.
Thank you. Well said. And question number five, what do you think is the biggest issue facing busy professionals today?
I think it's presence. I really think it's the ability to be aware, but not distracted by the past or the future or to-do lists or phones. You know, presence plus quiet, that's how you get to your still point. And I really believe that connecting to that place is life-changing. I'm living proof that's the case.
Yes. And I love the math, turning words into math and figuring all these things out. So presence plus quiet equals the still point. So for everyone wondering, where is my still point and how do I find it for the majority of this conversation? Now you know the answer. So thank you so much for joining us today, Kathy. I had so much fun and I really enjoyed this conversation.
Same here. Thank you so much, Angela. I appreciate it.
That's all the time we have for this week's episode of Beyond the Stethoscope. I hope you are inspired to take actionable steps towards accomplishing your goals and living your dreams.